We are holding on Cedric Gallard on the bays, about the middle of the wide lines, line beginning of the hole. So 10 lines from the bottom. We mentioned, we learned in the Mishnah that you're not allowed, that if a person uses one, that uses his fingernail, he cuts off his fingernails using his other nails or pulls out his hair by hand, then Rabbi Yehuda makes him chayav chatas for it, and the Chacham says it's only an Issur D'Rabbanan. So in this connection, Tanya, we learn in a Brayse, that Rav Shimon Elazar Omer, Tzipporin Shapira Shruba, a nail where most of it came off, of the finger, it sits in Shapersha Ruban, or if you have little strips of skin, little hangnails that you get that people get around on the ends of their fingers, around the nails, where some of the skin peels off and it's painful. The Yad Mutter, on the base, morning, I laid 10 lines from the bottom on Tadak Dalad on the base. So, if a nail came mostly off, it sits in Shapeh Sherubon, or these hang nails that mostly came off, b'yad mutter, to remove them by hand is mutter, b'kli chayav chatas, but if a person does it using a nail clipper, it takes it off with a nail clipper or whatever, you be chayav chatas. Please put it on mute. Please put yourself on mute. Thank you. The Gemara asked me, somebody over there has a lot of background noise. I'm asking again, please put yourself on mute. Thank you. So you might ask, what do you mean that if he does it by hand, then he's mutter l'chachila, and if he does it with a keli, he's chayav chatas? Since when do you have such a thing? If you have something, whenever you have something which is chayav chatas, you have the Chachamim are going to make a zera to make sure that you don't accidentally do that. So if it's chayav chatas to do it with a keli, why aren't the Chachamim making a zera that you can do it by hand either? And the answer is hachikama. You're right. What it means is like this. Pirshu Ruban, if most of the fingernail came off or most of the hangnail came off, the yad mutter, then to pull it off by hand is actually mutter, daraisa. The kli potter aval oster. But if at that point, once it's mostly off, then it's not really considered attached anymore. So then at that point, if a person were to take it off with a keli, even with a keli, he'd only be chayav derab, he'd only be also derabon. It wouldn't be chayav derab. Loi pirshu ruban, if most of it did not come off, the yad potter aval oster. So then to take it off by hand is also derabon. The kli, chayav chatas, and if he does it with a nail clipper, then it would be chayav chatas. So that's what it means. There are actually two different cases depending whether most of it came off or not. Again, according to Tosfos that we discussed yesterday, this that was saying that he'd be chayav, that it would be also daraisa with a keli, might be only according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon, who holds that malacha she'en tzricha legufa is potter, and the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, would, according to most poskim, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, would say therefore that it's not that can never be an issu daraisa, because after all, when you cut nails or hair or whatever, you're not doing it because you want the nails or the hair. You're doing them to get rid of them, and that's the definition of malacha she'enet tzricha legufa.
You're doing it for comfort also.
Well, you're doing it for comfort, but that's neither here nor there. According to Rashi's definition, that you would have rather not have been in that situation, or according to Tosfos, is that you're not doing it for the purpose that they did it in the Mishkan. Either way, yeah. Again, we learned yesterday, you have other Rishonim who disagree with that and say that given that you had the malacha, and given that in the Mishkan they had to take the hair off the Otis Elam Adami, for example, to prepare them, and they weren't using that hair, then we see that cutting off hair can be an Issur D'Oraisa even when you're not doing it for the sake of the hair, even when you're just doing it in order to smooth out the thing, or as you said, for your comfort or whatever. Amr of Yehuda, halacha to Rav Shimon. Halacha to Rav Yehuda says the halacha is in fact like that, that if most of the nail or most of the hang nail is off, then you are allowed to remove it by hand. But Amr, Rabbi Babachana, Amr of Yechon, Rusha Poshu, Klape Maila, Omit Saris Oisei. That applies only if they're ripping off towards the top and they're causing him pain. So what does that mean towards the top? Rashi learns the top over here means the top of the finger. Meaning, in other words, when you lift up your fingers, you have your fingertips are up in the air. So therefore, in other words, that if you have, it started coming off, like this is how hangnails usually develop. usually you have that the skin starts coming off closer to the nail, closer to the edge of the finger, and then it starts ripping downward. So when you have the point where most of it is off and it's causing you pain, then you'd be allowed to remove it on Shabbos. But not as opposed to, Rashi says, if let's say it started coming off in the other direction from further down on the finger towards the nail, then you wouldn't be allowed to take it off on Shabbos. Tosfos says the definition is the other way around. Klapei Maila means closer to the body, not closer to the fingertips, as Rashi says. So in practice, in Shulchan Aruch says you've got to be careful in either case, since you have this Machlokes, Rashi, and Tosfos, which one you're allowed to and which one you can't. Practically speaking, you can't really remove a hangnail on Shabbos.
Given reasons on both sides, why not? Because in a certain way, yes, in a certain way, not.
They don't give the reason, but preposterous the idea is, well, Rashi actually does. Rashi says if it starts coming off from the direction of the fingernail, which is how hangnails usually develop, then it's much more painful.
If you leave it, right?
Because it gets, you know how it is. It moves back and forth, and if it's irritated and never, yeah. Whereas according to Tosfos, when it says klapei maila, would be towards the body. Okay. You'd have to be careful, and then, yeah, you'd want to be careful not to cause yourself pain. You'd also, I mean, when you're removing, even if you do have a heter to remove a hangnail, according to either Rashi or Tosfos, or even if you're removing an actual nail that came off, you'd have to be careful you don't cause bleeding by removing it, because then you have a difference.
By the way,
too, that's true, but then you make sure to deal with it before Shabbos, or, yeah. Okay. Fine. Then he said in the Mishnah, "V'chena degelas chula," the same way a woman who braids her hair, or kechelas who puts on eyeshadow, and pekeses. And we have two explanations in Rashi what pekeses means. One is that it means that she combs her hair with a comb or with her fingers. And there is an explanation, I think, from the Rivosh on Rashi that says that doesn't just mean combing as in the regular kind of combing. You take a comb and run it through the hair. There wouldn't be any issue in that. He learned that it means more like you take a comb and dip it in oil or something and use it to like lay down the hair and then, you know, like get it, you know, not really massage it, but the point is more like you're getting the hair to stick together with the oil, like sort of, you know, you're making like cornrows of it or something. Yeah. Okay. So that was one explanation. And then Rashi's other explanation of pekeses is that she puts a kind of dough-like substance on her face and then takes it off and the skin becomes red. So we said those three things. Rabbi Eliezer says it's chayav chatos, meaning that it's an issur d'oraisa, and the Chacham says it's only an issur d'rabbanan. So the question is, according to Rabbi Eliezer, gedelas kechelas pekeses mishumayim chayva. What would she be? On what grounds would she be chayav for doing any of these things, according to Rabbi Eliezer? Braiding hair would be also on the grounds of oreg. It's like weaving, like when you weave cloth and you're going back and forth with the aid of thread through the shefi. That's similar to braiding hair. Putting eyeshadow on would be also on the grounds of writing, because taking the applicator and putting it around the eye is similar to taking a pen and writing. And prekeses, mishum tova, and prekeses would be a matter of that it's like making thread. Either if we say the first explanation in Rashi, that it means combing with this oil-like stuff or whatever, so it's like making the hairs stick together, so therefore it's like making fibers into thread. You actually have an explanation also from one of the Achronim, the Magen Shloimeh, the grandfather of the Pnei Yeshua, who explains that, no, Rashi just means plain old combing. But even that, also, like you're separating the hairs out, and it's similar to spinning thread in that sense, but you're making the hairs into individual threads. Anyway, according to Rashi's second explanation, that pekeses is this business with this dough-like stuff that she smears on her face, Rashi explains she makes it into like threads and then puts it on her face. Apparently she doesn't just put it as a like one big mass on her face, she makes threads out of it. She makes threads out of the dough and puts them on her face, therefore it would be a matter of making threads. So, Amru Rabbanan Kamed Rababohu, so the Chachamim, in front of Rababohu, the members of his yeshiva, said, what do you mean? Is that the normal way of weaving? Especially since it's attached to the scalp still, it's not going to last for very long, because a braid doesn't last very long, you're eventually going to take it out. Is that the normal way of writing? Is that the normal way of spinning thread? none of these are the normal way of doing the malacha. So why should Rabbi Eliezer make you chayiv chatas for them? Elo, Amar Rabbi Bohu. So Rabbi Bohu says no. The Dini Farshali Mineid Rabbi Yosef of Chanina. Rabbi Yosef of Chanina explained to me that it's as follows: Kechelas Mishum Tevas. Putting on eyeshadow is an iser because not because it's like writing, but because it's like dyeing. Like you have dyeing cloth, and he or she's dyeing her skin. He or she's dyeing her skin with the makeup. And Mishpat over here gets into a long thing over here that apparently the Rambam's Girsa was still that you look at the first Ein Mishpat on the top of Tzadikei Amar Aleph. You see a long thing over there. Usually Ein Mishpat just gives you a reference to the Rambam and a reference to the Smag and a reference to the Shulchan Aruch, and that's that. But over here he goes into a long arichos about how the fact that the Rambam writes that it's a matter of writing. That's an issue of writing. So apparently he had the girsa that it was kesevet like before. Because fine, even if ein derech tziv b'kach, nevertheless, the fact is you're applying eyeshadow to the skin, therefore it's similar to writing where you're applying ink to paper. And when it becomes a derech, right. Okay. So gedelas or pekeses mishum bona. And the other two, braiding hair and pekeses, are also on the grounds of building. What do you mean? How is making a braid or combing hair or whatever a way of binyan? The answer is ain. As a matter of fact, yes, it is. To the Dorash of Shimon ben Manasseh, as of Shimon ben Manasseh Darshan, we learned this in Brachas as well, when the Pasuk says, Vayiven Hashem Elokim et Hatzela, it says Hashem Elokim built up the side, which he had taken off Adam, and made into Chava. The word vayiven means melamach kila akadosh baruch hu l'chava, means that Hashem braided Chava's hair, ve'havia etzel Adam, and then brought her to Adam, so this way she would look more attractive. And where does vayiven come to mean braiding? Shekein b'krakeh hayom koren l'kala isa benisa. We find that in the cities near the sea, they call a woman who braids hair benisa, one who builds. So we see that there's a connection between braiding hair and building. So therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it would actually be the Malacha Daraisa building, and according to the Rabbanon, it would be only also the Rabbanon. According to the Chachamim, it would be only also the Rabbanon. Tanya, Rav Shimon Elazar, Omer, Gedeles Kecheles Pekeses La'atma Ptura, Rav Shimon Elazar says another wrinkle on it. If a woman braids her own hair or puts on her own eyeshadow or does her own pekeses, then ptura, then she would be, then it's only also drabanam, so she's part of machatas, lachaver to chayeves. But if she does it for another woman, then she would actually be chayev. Because we had a similar concept before about a person doing these things for themselves versus for somebody else. We had something similar to that where a person cuts their own hair versus somebody's fingernails. We said taking off your own fingernails versus taking off somebody else's fingernails, where it's much easier to take off your own than it is somebody else's, and therefore there might be a reason to distinguish. Shimon Elazar makes a similar distinction. We said Rabbi Elazar had said that if he does it for somebody else, if he uses his fingernails to take somebody else's off, then he would in fact be possible in the point of the other, because it's not the normal way of, not only it's not the normal way of doing it, but it's hard to get a good grip on it and do it properly. So Rav Shimon Elazar is making a similar distinction over here, that if a woman does these things for herself, then like the Chachamim, she's potter. But if she does it for another woman, then she's able to braid it very well, and she's able to do the other things, the braiding or the combing or whatever very well. Therefore, she'd be chayev like Rav Eliezer. So Rav Shimon Elazar, in other words, is taking a middle view. The halacha is not like them. The halacha is like the Chachamim, that all these things are also only the Rabbanim. Similarly, Rav Shimon Elazar said in the name of Rav Eliezer, Isha loitaver strach al paneha, a woman is not allowed to put rouge on her face on Shabbos. Rouge is a red makeup. It has an effect similar to the blush or whatever. It has an effect similar to what Rashi was describing for under Pekeses, that it makes her skin look redder, so it makes her cheeks look redder or whatever. She's not allowed to do that on Shabbos, because she's dyeing her skin. which now you have nowadays. The whole question about makeup on, you have the concept that they came up some years ago with a make of Shabbos makeup. Essentially, you have there are poskim, I believe Moshe is one of them, who allows if the makeup is like just a dry powder, and some poskim also say it definitely has to be white, not colored, then they allow it. So you have companies out there that make certain kinds of things that they advertise as Shabbos makeup, which basically that's what it is. They're powders only. Some of them are only white powders rather than colored ones. And they have different things. You look on their websites, for example, you can find different rules that they say how you have to make sure to put them on. Don't put them on top of previous makeup, et cetera. So it's not so simple, and it's probably best to just avoid. But you have women who use such things. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. More things that Rabbi Eliezer says that are malachas daraisa, and therefore a person will be chayav chatas for them. And the Chachamim are saying that it's only an issur derabbanan, a shvus. Actually, yeah, people point out that when we use the word shvus always, really it maybe correctly should be shvois, as in an imperative rest. In other words, the Chachamim are telling you rest on Shabbos from doing such and such things, which might be mutar daraisa, but we're asking you derabbanan. Anyway, the Tana Rabbanan, a cholev, a person who milks a cow on Shabbos, by mechabit, or a person or mechabit, so actually give two explanations of mechabit. Both of them involve the process of making cheese. When you make cheese, you start by taking milk and you put rennet into it, which is an enzyme that makes it curdle and then form cheese. So then you have at that point, then you're causing that the milk solids are separating from the liquid. Then you have the next stage of it is you put it in kind of like a net bag or something, and you let the water drips out, and you're left with the solid cheese. The Rashi has two explanations what mechabit is, whether it's the first stage of putting in the rennet or the second stage of putting it in the mesh bag. The Aruch seems to give a different explanation, that he says that it means making butter, churning milk to make butter. In modern Hebrew also they use the word mechabit, means just that, to churn milk and make butter. Anyway. So Bahama Gabin, or a person who makes cheese on Shabbos, Pigre Geras, all of those, a person is chayav chatas if he does a Gregeras size, because as usual, when it comes to malachas involving food, the size is a Gregeras. Hamachabed, then you have a person sweeps the floor on Shabbos, Bahama Rabbit, or he sprinkles water in order to keep the dust down, Baharoy de Chalas Dvash, or if he takes honeycombs out of a beehive on Shabbos, but all those things, shogeg b'Shabbos chayev chatas, all of those things, if he does them b'shogeg on Shabbos, he'd be chayev chatas. In other words, they're all malachas daraisa. He's it be yomtiv loyka arbaim, and if he does them amazing on yomtiv, he's going to get malchus, because in other words they're also on yomtiv as well. They're not considered malachas eichel nefesh. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So says Rabbi Eliezer. V'cham amim echad zeh ve'echad zeh einei ela mishum shavus. V'cham said both Shabbos and yomtiv, it's only oster as shavus or shavus, meaning that it's only an issur derabbanan.
Show
you
the word.
Roida means to remove something from where it was stuck to. At the beginning of the Masechta, for example, we had, for example, a person puts bread in the oven and forgetting that it's Shabbos. Can he be roida? Can he remove it from the wall of the oven before it gets baked and he comes to a chiyuv chatas? Yeah, the word roida means to take something off, means to take something off of where it was stuck onto, which is what you do over here with honeycombs. Okay, so Tosfos discusses as far as the sweeping and the sprinkling water, the reason why Rabbi Eliezer would say it's chayav chatas, he says thick ratio, it's inevitable that you're going to fill up holes in the ground when we're talking about a dirt floor. We'll get to later what about tiled floors and wooden floors or whatever. We'll get to that soon. But he holds thick ratio, and thick ratio of course would be also even appointed of Shimon. Whereas the Chachamim would hold, it's not necessarily tzik resha. You might fill in holes in the ground in the course of the sweeping or the sprinkling water or whatever, but not necessarily. Then Tosfos gets into a very interesting discussion. This about we're saying about removing honeycombs, that what, at least on a daraisa level, why isn't it considered melechas oichel nefesh? We know that you are allowed to do melachas for food on Yom Tov. Roy de chalas vash, you're doing because you want the honey. So that's a melacha involving. So that's a melacha involving food. So why should it be a melacha daraisa on Yom Tov? The Tosfos says, in fact, maybe Rav Eliezer would only be talking about where towards the end of the day, you're not going to have time to eat the honey before Yom Tov, but before the end of Yom Tov, or the honey has spoiled. And in all other cases, maybe it would be also only Dirabban. And Tosfos says similarly as far as making cheese, for example. Another one of the ones in this list, maybe making cheese would actually be mutter would be mutter daraisa and only on Yom Tov and only Dirabban. Would it be Osir? Many other Rishonim disagree with those points and say that when we say that you're allowed to do Malachas Eichel Nefesh and Yom Tov, there are rules about that. There are only certain Malachas Eichel Nefesh on Mutter on Yom Tov. And this is not one of them. This is more like harvesting, as the Gemara is going to say soon. Taking honeycombs out of a hive is in a way similar to harvesting. We're going to learn from a pasuk, according to Rabbi Eliezer, and therefore that the same way as you're not allowed to harvest on Yom Tov, even though conceivably you could use that for food, the same thing. And the same thing as far as making cheese. There are malachas that are so far removed from the eating that they're not considered malachas eichel nefesh, basically. In fact, Tosfos actually mentions an interesting point in this case. Now the halacha is like the chachamim, all these things are only also derabanan, which means again that making cheese, for example, on Yom Tov is only also derabanan, meaning daraisa it would be mutter. So therefore, now the Gemara is going to say in a minute that making cheese is a malacha of is related to the malacha of boina, because you're joining the pieces together and like you're building something. So in that case, Tosfos says, so why wouldn't you be allowed to build a house on Yom Tov on a daraisa level? We have a general concept that once a malacha is, where many times we say once a malacha is mutter for oichel nefesh, then it's mutter for other purposes as well. This is how we're allowed to carry things on Yom Tov, for example, even though they're not directly oichel nefesh. So Tosfos says, in fact, maybe building on Yom Tov would be also only dirabanan. The Chacham Sofer points out, he says that it's a little hard to say that because, for example, you have the Gemara in Shavuos talks about the question whether you could build the Beis Mikdash on Yom Tov, and the answer is no. The answer is that no, you have Pesukim that imply that you can't. If it was only Dirabanan, then you should be allowed to when it comes to building the Beis Mikdash. All right. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. So again, so Rabbi Eliezer is saying that all the things we listed over here are Chayav Chatas, the Chachamim and or on Yom Tov Malchus, and the Chachamim say that it's all Shavuos. Okay, so Gemara tells Rabbi Nachman bar Guria Ikla l'Nahadar. Rabbi Nachman bar Guria one time visited Nahadar. Bo Mine, they asked him as follows: Cholav Mishamayim Chayav. If a person milks a cow on Shabbos, on what grounds is he Chayav? What Malacha has he done? Amalahu Mishum Choylev. So he tells them exactly that. He did the Malacha of milking a cow. Mechabit Mishum Mai Mechayev. They asked him if he does Mechabit, making cheese or making butter or whatever, on what grounds is he Chayev? Amalahu Mishum Mechabit. So he says the same thing. This is Malacha of making butter or making cheese, and he was over on it. Well, that's going to be the question. Megabin Mishum Mai Mechayev. On what grounds, if he makes cheese, is he chayev? And megabin over here means, even according to Rashi, that mechabit are the earlier stages in making the cheese. Eventually, you have after the liquid has dripped away, then you take the pieces and you press them together to make a cheese, to make a block of cheese. So they asked him, on what grounds would one be chayev if they did that on Shabbos? On the lehumish from megabin, he says, because you're making cheese, and that's also. So they said to him very dismissively, your Rebbe must have been the kind of person who just goes into the meadow and cuts reeds. In other words, your Rebbe obviously didn't do a very good job explaining all this to you if you think that those are actual malachas. Also, I saw a cute verse on this that we learned in Brachas when we had the whole sugya about various dreams and what they mean, that one of them was that if a person sees himself in a dream going into a meadow where there are all kinds of, you have low reeds over there and you have tall trees or whatever, then it shows that he's going to be a Rosh Yeshiva. He's going to have smaller Talmidim and bigger Talmidim and whatever. So over here, they're telling him, your Rebbe must have been the kind of person who saw such a thing in a dream, but then he went and chopped down all the reeds. So like he's not doing very much as far as teaching Torah. Okay. also show the Medrash. So Rav Nachman Bar Guria went to ask in the Medrash to tackle what is the answer, on what grounds are all these things offered. Amrulay, and they told him, Chol of Chayim Mishum Mefaret, milking a cow is also on the grounds of Mefaret, is that you're taking the milk out of its natural container, which is the udder of the animal. Therefore, it's a tolda of dosh. It's a tolda of threshing. When it comes to threshing, you're taking the wheat kernels and you're breaking open the shells in order to get the wheat out. And the same thing over here, you're extracting the wheat from its shells, the kernel from its shells. The same way over here, you're extracting the milk from its natural container. Rashi brings a different explanation that it would be related to koitzer, that it would be related to harvesting, but Rashi disagrees with that. There is, by the way, a good deal of discussion. We learned earlier in the Masechta that Rabbi Yehuda holds that there's such a thing as dosh when it comes to things that don't grow from the ground. The Chachamim disagree with him. So in that case, how can we say that milking a cow, which a cow doesn't grow from the ground, is considered dosh? So one explanation Tosfos mentioned over there is that in fact an animal is considered gedulei karka because it lives off grass, which grows from the ground. We know in connection with the halachas of Ma'aser Sheni, for example, that meat is considered gedulei karka for that reason. So by the same token, over here, as far as Hilchos Shabbos, it would be the same thing. So a person who milks is chayev on the grounds of mefarik, which is a tolda of dosh. Mechabet chayev mishum borer. A person who makes cheese or butter is chayev on the grounds of borer because he's taking out the food from the psoilus, because in the first stage he's putting in the rennet and causing the curds to separate from the whey, which is borer. In the second stage he's putting it in the mesh bag and the liquid is dripping away, which is also borer. He's keeping the oichel and throwing away the psoilus. And Megabin Chayav Mishum Boneh, and when he gathers the cheese curds together to make one block of cheese, then he's Chayav on the grounds of Boneh because it's like building. Okay. Next, we said Hamachabed Hamerabit V'Haroded Vash Chalas Vash. Next, we said in the Braita that so those three, by the way, everybody agrees with. Those aren't subject to the machlokes of Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. But those three things, milking and mechabes and megaben, are isurim d'oraisa, and a person who does them on Shabbos is going to be chayav chabes. But now we have the next three in the Braisa that said the sprinkling water to lay down the dust, and taking honeycombs out of a hive on Shabbos, a hive chappas, one to the other. So let's analyze that. We said if a person does that b'shogeg on Shabbos, it's chayv chappas. His it be yomtiv loyka aboyim, the Rebbe Eliezer. And Rebbe Eliezer continues, if he does it b'mezid on yomtiv, he's going to get malchus, because there is surim daraisa. Amr Rebbe Eliezer, so Rebbe Eliezer, the Amorah says, my time is Rebbe Eliezer. What's Rebbe Eliezer's reason? Specifically, he's going to focus on the taking honeycombs out of the hive. Why, according to Rebbe Eliezer, should that be a malacha d'oraisa? Because like this, you have a pasuk in Sefer Shmuel. You have a story over there where the Jewish people are fighting against the Plishtim. You have this is when Shaul is still king. So Shaul announces that everybody has to fast today, because he didn't want people distracted with eating or whatever, where they should be chasing the enemy, whatever it was. The pasuk describes over there how Yonasan had been away when Shaul said that, so he wasn't aware of it, and he was actually faint with hunger. The Gemara mentions in Yuma that he could barely see straight. So he sees some honey on the ground over there, and he takes a stick and dips the end of a stick into the Yara Sadvash, which literally means the forest of honey, and he took some honey and ate it off the end of a stick, and his eyes lit up, and he was able to continue fighting. And you have a whole, it's part of a whole long story there. Anyway, the point is, the pasuk uses the expression, Vayitpo Oitza B'Yara Sadvash, he dipped his stick into the forest of honey. So the question is, Chimayin in Yara Sadvash, what does a forest have anything to do with honey? Now you have, by the way, there are Mekoshim on the Pasuk and also in other places who say that actually the forest of honey over here means sugar cane. Like this, we don't really find the Gemara, we don't really find in the times of the Gemara or earlier that they had sugar cane. It seems to have been brought in only later on. But you have Rishonim who explain that what Yonasan saw over here was a stand of sugar cane, and therefore it literally is a forest of honey because you have the canes with sugar oozing out of them. But the Gemara over here is assuming that it means real honey. So then what does honey have anything to do with the forest? So my yar, a cherish man of a Shabbos hive, just like a forest, if a person pulls something off a tree in a forest on Shabbos, he's chayav chatos. That's the malacha of toitzer. Chalis drash, a rodim, men of a Shabbos, chayav chatos. So Rabbi Eliezer would say the same thing if a person takes out honey from honeycombs from a hive on Shabbos, then he's also chayav chatos. So Chum disagree with that because we can't learn halachas from things in Nevi'im, or because maybe Taka they would understand that the Yadav drash was sugar cane. Whatever it is exactly, the halacha is that it's also only the Rabbanan. Okay. Next, we mentioned about the sweeping and about the sprinkling water to lay down the dust. So the Gemara says, Amemar shara zilcha b'machoza. Amemar allowed them to sprinkle water to lay down the dust in the city of Machoza. Rashi points out in the whole city, all of the floors over there were made of stone or tiles or whatever. So therefore, there's no issue of smoothing out holes in the ground, and that's the thing. Omar, because he says, "Time of my Omar Rabbanan." Why did the Rabbanan say you're not allowed to sprinkle water? Gilma osi lashvuye gumus. Made it's because you're going to come to smooth out holes in the ground. Hocha like a gumus, but over here there are no holes in the ground because it's all tiled floors. In fact, Tosfos makes that distinction earlier in the Masechta that when you have a city which is all tiled floors or all stone or all hard floors or whatever, then such things would be allowed. Similarly, also we talked earlier in the Masechta about the question of dragging around a bench, where you're allowed to do it, we had a case over there involving a shul also in Mechuzah over there, where they allowed somebody to drag around a bench. So Tosfos says, same idea. In other words, when you have some of the houses in the city have dirt floors and some of them have tile floors, then you wouldn't be allowed to do either of these things because you may come to do a malacha, either Daraisa or Darabach. But when it's all tiled floors, then there's nothing to be confused with, and therefore not. Meaning all the houses in the city, yes. The Ramban disagrees with that, though. The Ramban says, no, you don't necessarily compare Malachos of Shabbos one to the other. You could say that over here we're allowing this sprinkling of water to lay down the dust, because after all, it's not very likely that you're going to fill in holes in the ground in the course of doing that, as opposed to, let's say, dragging a bench. There, even if it's a tiled floor, there's more reason to say that it's also because the fact is on if you did it on a dirt floor, it's pretty much thick ratio that you're going to dig up the dirt. So the Ramban says you don't necessarily compare one to the other. There is, by the way, a big machlokes of Gaonim and Rishonim about the question. One group saying, well, you know what? Let's finish the Gemara and then we'll talk about the practicalities of sweeping and whatever on Shabbos. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Rava Tesfa, Ashtechel Ravina, become a star mehevla. Rava Tesfa, or Rava Tesfa, however the Bach says, please put it on mute. Found Ravina become a star mehevla that he was in distress because of the heat. Because of the heat, and there's dust rising from the ground and whatever. Another version of it is that Malkshisha, the son of Rava, founder of Ashi, that he was having trouble with the hevel, with the heat and the dust and whatever. Amalei, and Rashi says, you have dust that's coming up from the floor and it's causing that there's a lot of heat and a lot of uncomfortableness in the house. Amalei, the Rava Tesfah, or Malkshisha says, Loi Sava Lamar Lahodatanya, Rebbe, don't you hold of what it says in a Braisa, Haroisal Rabbis is based in a Shabbos, somebody who wants to sprinkle water in his house on Shabbos to lay down the dust, which is what you would do in a case like this when you're having trouble with hevel. You can't do it directly, fine, because it's a dirt floor, but maybe I rave a malaya mayim. What you can do is you bring a basin full of water, the roichas ponav bezavisu, you take it to one corner of the house, of the room, and you wash your face over there, and some of the water drips on the ground. Yada bezavisu, then you take it to a different corner and do your hands. Ragla bezavisu, and then you do your feet in yet another corner. Venimta bias mitzrabis me'elav, and then automatically the house ends up having the ribos done, the sprinkling done. Amalei. So Ravina or Ravashi says, Lava Dachoi, it's not in my mind, which means Rashi says two explanations. One is I had forgotten about that Braisa. In other words, but now that you reminded me, yeah, I'll go ahead and do that. The second explanation is actually the other way around. I don't hold of that concept. I don't hold that you can do a hard drama like that.
I'm doing that for that reason.
Because you're doing it for that reason, and therefore, yeah. Okay. We learn in a Braisa, Isha Chachoma Mabetes Beis B'Shabbos. We learn in a Braisa that a smart woman, meaning a wife or a daughter of a Talmid Chacham, who's heard this din from her father, is able to also sprinkle water in her house on Shabbos, because what she can do, Rashi says, similarly, she can wash the dishes, wash different dishes in different corners of the house, and that way, again, water ends up getting sprinkled on the ground. However, the Gemara says, "V'hai idne the spirit alum to Reb Shimon." Nowadays, since we hold like Reb Shimon, that davar she'ein miskaven is mutter. And after all, he was ein miskaven. You're not intending to smooth out holes in the ground. And as Tosfos said before, according to the Chachamim, it's not psik resha that you will. Then therefore, shori afilo hachila. Then it's allowed. Even hachila, you don't have to go through all these tricks of washing your hands and face and whatever in different parts of the house, or washing dishes in different parts of the house, you're allowed to do the sprinkling.
Sprinkling is one thing, I'm just wondering, and then smoothing out is another thing. You sprinkle it with four holes.
No, but sprinkling means, in other words, that you're causing the dust, you're laying down dust, you're preventing it. So therefore, that can cause that holes in the ground get smoothed out and filled up. Now, you have a big machlokas ga'onim and rishonim on the question, does this apply also to sweeping? We mentioned that he was sweeping and sprinkling. So sprinkling, we're saying you're allowed to hachila. Is sweeping also mutter? So the halachas gedola says, yes, same idea. It's not necessarily that you're going to smooth out holes, so it's not psik resha. It's davar she'ein miskaven. Same idea. It should be mutter. The bahag holds like that. The reef holds like that. On the other hand, you have a number of rishonim that disagree with that and say, Tosfos mentions over here, that even if you don't have that issue, you still might have the issue of mukta. You're moving around the dirt and whatever that's on the ground. That itself would be an issue. You have other rishonim disagree, and they say there's a difference between sprinkling water, which may or may not fill in holes, and sweeping, which is much more likely to fill in holes. So lemaisa, what it is a dirt floor, you're definitely not allowed to sweep on Shabbos, which would be, we have to be machmir according to those rishonim. When it comes to when you have a tiled floor or wooden floor, then you have the machlokas whether the gzeira still applies. So you have it's smooth. There's nothing to smooth out. But on the other hand, do we make a gzeira because it might be confused with a wooden floor, with a dirt floor? Sorry. So you have actually technically in Shulchan Aruch it says you're not allowed to. In part, you're not allowed to sweep with a broom. It says you're allowed to sweep with something unusual. It gives an example of, let's say, to sweep with feathers or something, where it says it's not a normal way of sweeping, then you have more of a heter of doing it. Lemaisa, nowadays, you have many people that do hold you're allowed to sweep your house on Shabbos. And one idea is, because it's very uncommon nowadays for anybody to have dirt floors. It's one thing in the olden days, fine. You had maybe an entire city like Mechuza where they all have tiled floors, but still you have other cities where everybody had dirt floors, as opposed to nowadays in pretty much the whole civilized world, it's very unusual to have dirt floors. So therefore there's more of a reason to be moderate. However, there are still rules in it. You can't use a broom with hard bristles because then they're going to break off. Then you have a different issue. You can only use a broom with soft bristles. And you have some posts can say that it's only allowed if you had previously swept the room before Shabbos, and now you're going to sweep it again on Shabbos. So it's not so simple. What it is, though, is that you are allowed to ask the goy to do it. It's not even one of those things where you have to hint to the goy like you do with certain other things. You're allowed to tell him out. You're allowed to ask him outright to sweep the floor. Okay. Mishnah says, we mentioned in the previous Mishnah about removing hair or nails. So now, in a similar sense, so now the Mishnah is going to talk about a similar thing about removing something from where it naturally grows. So again, this is kind of a digression from the topic of Hatzav Achnasa, which has been taking up the last few parakim, which we're going to continue in the next parak. We're digressing now to talk about malachas related to kotzer and gozes and whatever. The Mishnah says, "Atolish me'osif nachul." If a person pulls out a plant from a flower pot that has a hole, chayev, then he's chayev chatos. That's what that would mean, isur d'oraisa. Because since the flower pot has a hole, then the plant is able to get nourishment from the ground by way of the hole. Rashi uses the expression shemiriach lachmuches akarka, like it can, so to speak, smell the moisture of the ground through the hole. Even Rashi says, it doesn't even have to be that the hole is at the bottom of the pot, even if it's at the side of the pot, then that also. However, the Rashba does say, for it to be considered a flower pot with a hole, it would have to be that the hole is at the level of the roots or below. If you have, let's say, there's a flower pot is filled up halfway with dirt, let's say, and all the roots are in the dirt, and then you have a butt in the empty part of the pot above, then you have a hole, that wouldn't be considered an office knuckle, says the Rashba. Okay. The She'enin knuckle potter, if the flower pot does not have a hole, then he's potter from pulling out from it, because then that's not considered something that is not, it is growing in the dirt that's in the flower pot over there, but that's not really considered, that is attached to the ground. Therefore, it would be only an Issur D'Rabbanan. But Rav Shimon, potter, bezeh, bezeh. Rav Shimon says either way it's potter. Okay. Something else says, Rami lay Abaya le Rava. Abaya pointed out to Rava a contradiction. Ba'ami lo Rabchia bar Rav le Rav. Others say Rabchia bar Rav pointed out the contradiction to Rav. Like, Tanan Rav Shimon quoted Bazel Bazel. We're saying that Rav Shimon says that even if the flower pot has a hole, then pulling the plant out of it is only an Issur D'Rabbanan. Alma Nokov le Rav Shimon Kishain and Nokov Meshavilei. Meaning that Rav Shimon considers a flower pot with a hole and without a hole to be exactly the same. But we have a contradiction because we learn in a braisa, Rav Shimon Omer, Ein Bein Nokul B'She'en Nokul. There's no difference between a flower pot with a hole and without one. El L'Hachshir Zroim B'Vad. Only as far as the matter of Hachshir Zroim. Meaning, we know that food has to become wet in order to be Mekabel Tumah, and when it has to become wet after it was detached from the ground. Because otherwise, when food is attached to the ground, it's impossible. It's always going to get wet. So what it is Rav Shimon is saying that if the flower pot has a hole, then the plant that's growing in it is considered still attached to the ground. So even if it gets wet with one of the Shiva Mashkin, it won't be able to be Makabal Tumah. As opposed to if the flower pot does not have a hole, then it's considered as if it was already detached from the ground, and therefore it's able to become Mukhshar Makabal Tumah. So Rav Shimon is saying that that's the only difference, implying that when it comes to Shabbos. So the point of the question is that Rav Shimon is saying that only when it comes to Hechsher Zroim, so why should it be different as far as Shabbos? Why would we distinguish when it comes to Shabbos would we say that they're the same thing, and then when it comes to Hechsher Zroim, we would say it's not the same thing? The answer is Amalei L'chol Mili Rav Shimon Katolosh Meshakilei. Actually, what it is, in other words, the point of the question is like this. Again, if you're going to tell me that as far as Hilchos Shabbos, Rav Shimon considers it detached from the ground, then as far as being Makabel Tumah, also, he should consider it detached from the ground, whether it has a hole or not. So you should always consider whether it has a hole, it's able to be Mukhshar Makabel Tumah. Why is he saying that if it has a hole, it can't be Mukhshar Makabel Tumah, implying that it's attached to the ground, then he's being inconsistent with what he's saying. As far as Shabbos, that you'd be potter for pulling the plant out. That's the question. The answer is Amalei L'chol Mili Rav Shimon Katolosh Meshavilei. Actually, what it is for all purposes, for most purposes, meaning Rav Shimon does consider a plant in a flower pot to be considered detached from the ground, even if the flower pot has a hole. And Rashi points out it's not just as far as Shabbos and as far as Hechsher Zroim. There's also the question, for example, if you sell somebody the plant, can they be koine it with Meshicha? If it's considered like the ground, then they can't. You can't be koine ground with Meshicha. You're koine ground with Kesef. If you say it's considered Metalpilin, then you can be koine it with Meshicha, same as any other Metalpilin. Also, the question would be, can you use it as a basis for writing a Prusbel? The din is, when you're writing a Prusbel, the loiva, in order for the Prusbel to be valid, has to own some land. So if he owns a flower pot, with or without a hole, would that be considered land? Could you use that as a basis for writing a Prusbel? Nowadays, by the way, when you make a Prusbel before and after Shemitah, we're not particularly careful to make sure that the person actually owns some land. One idea that Amma mentions in one place, an idea from the Gaonim that every Jew has a portion of four Amos in Eretz Yisrael, that Amma himself disagrees with that concept because he says, what if the person, for example, is descended from Gaonim? He has no particular portion in Eretz Yisrael. But anyway, that's how it is. But anyway, so Rav Shimon would say that for most of these purposes, we are going to say a plant inside a flower pot is considered detached from the ground. So that's meaning that's not attached. And therefore, as far as Hilchot Shabbos, it wouldn't therefore be potter, which is what he's saying in the Mishnah. the shiny, the inyan truma, is different when it comes to the matter of truma. Why does he make a distinction when it comes to being the kabel truma? That why is he making a distinction when it comes to being the kabel truma? That that there he's saying, if it has a hole, then it's not able to be mosher, and if it doesn't have a hole, it can. Da Torah ribs a tahara etzel zroim, because the Torah adds, when it comes to seeds, an extra matter of tahara. The shenema al kol zera zerua asher yizareya. The expression in the pasuk is that any seed that can be planted, that is planted. Meaning, as long as it's in any way attached to the ground, the three words that you have, the three times that it uses the shodesh zera, make it that as long as in some way it can be considered attached to the ground, then it's considered attached. So in this case, it's in a flower pot that has a hole. In a certain very limited sense, it can be considered attached to the ground, because as Rashi had said on the Mishnah, it's able to derive nourishment through the hole. Therefore, for that purpose only, we consider it as if it was attached to the ground and it can't be mukshar l'kabel truma. But for every other purpose, we consider it as if it was already detached. Okay. By the way, you have a bit of discussion among Rishonim. What material would the flower pot be made out of? Are there any materials where if it doesn't have a hole, it doesn't matter? Maybe for example, Rashi and Tosfos discuss in various places, maybe a wooden one doesn't require a hole because wood absorbs moisture, and therefore even if it doesn't have a hole, the plant is still able to get moisture from the ground by way of the walls of the flower pot. Another possibility is maybe on the contrary, clay cheres don't require a hole because after all, clay cheres are made out of dirt that was baked. So you have things like that. Okay, the Gemara continues. A certain old Talmud Chacham asked Reb Zeira as follows. We've learned before that a Tosfos in Cholin that says that wants to say that maybe every time it says in the Gemara, "Hu Sava" means Eliyahu. So maybe not. Okay, anyway. So he asked Reb Zeira, "Shodesh Kneged Nefer." What happens now? You're telling me in the Mishnah, Reb Shimon is saying there's no difference whether it has a hole or it doesn't have a hole. Either way, the plant is not considered attached to the ground. But what if there's a root directly behind the hole? You have a hole in one place in the flower pot. You have dirt over there, and then someplace in that dirt, directly behind the hole, is a root of the plant. So, Mali Amin of Shimon. What would Reb Shimon say in that case? Would he agree that in that case it should be considered like it's connected to the ground? Ishtik, so Reb Zeira was quiet, he didn't say anything. Zimna Choda, another time, Ashtachay, this same old Talmud Chacham, found Reb Zeira, the Yosef Akama, he was sitting and saying a din, Umoydir Reb Shimon, Shem Nikav, the Kedei Taharasei, Reb Shimon would agree that if the flower pot developed a hole that is large enough to make it that it's not Makabal Tumah anymore, then Reb Shimon would agree that the plant in the flower pot is now considered connected to the ground. Now, what is that size? So we're going to discuss soon that actually there are different sizes of holes that can happen in a free cheres that have different effects on it. But over here, we're talking about Rashi and Tosfos both explain that usually a free cheres is meant to hold food in, and the shear for a free cheres that's meant to hold food, if it develops a hole, if it develops a hole large enough that olives will fall out through the hole, then it's not Makabel Truma anymore. So that would be what we're saying over here. If this flower pot developed a hole large enough for olives to fall out of, then Reb Shimon would agree that it's not considered a keli anymore, and therefore that the thing that's growing in it is considered attached to the ground already. Because not a keli anymore, or Tosfos says because bottle to the ground. It's already bottled to the ground. Okay, so that was what Reb Zeira was saying. Amaleis, and now this Ahu Sava says to Reb Zeira, Hashka, now let's consider what's going on over here. Shodesh Kneged Nekev Ba'oyiminach. I asked you about the case where you have a smaller hole, but you have a root directly behind the hole. And you didn't tell me anything. You weren't sure what Reb Shimon would say in that case. Nekev B'kedei Taharosim Ba'oya. Does it need to be said then that if it has a hole B'kedei Taharosim, If anything, you should have the same suffix. Maybe the other roots that are not near the hole should not be considered mechubar. You're saying as an obvious fact that everything in it is considered attached to the ground. In that case, then you should have been in that. Why? According to your logic before, that you didn't know the answer when there was one root near the hole. By the same logic over here, even if there's a larger hole, you should still have to see which roots are behind the hole and which ones are not. Amrabaya. So Abaya says, okay, actually, the E Itmar Lahod Rav Zera. Okay, now if what Rav Zera, if this that we're quoting in the name of Rav Zera was actually said, that Rav Shimon does say that there's a certain kind of a hole where he would agree that the flower pot may, that the plant in the flower pot is attached to the ground. If that was said, Hochihu de Itmar, it must have been said as follows: Umoded Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon would agree if, when would Rav Shimon agree, if the hole is far down enough on the flower pot where the pot won't hold the revius anymore, then for sure it can't be considered a caving. So in other words, not necessarily if there's a hole further up where, in other words, you have from the bottom of the flower pot up to the hole could hold at least the revius, then it still can be considered a caving. Maybe therefore Rav Shimon would say that it's still not considered attached to the ground. But if the hole prevents the container from even holding a revius, then for sure Rav Shimon would not consider it a cave anymore. This is, by the way, relevant as far as the dinim of Netilas Yadayim as well, that way if you have a keli that develops a hole so far down that the keli can't even hold the revius up to the hole, then you can't use it for Netilas Yadayim.
Doesn't matter how big the hole is.
So now we're going to talk about different size holes, but here we're talking about a hole that's big enough. Here we're talking about a hole that's big enough for liquid to leak in. So that's what we're going to get to next. So Gemara says, Amar Rabba, Chomesh Midas B'Klei Cheres. There are five rules when it comes to Klei Cheres. Number one, Nikah Kamoti Mashke. Number one, you can have a Klei Cheres that has a tiny hole in it, big enough that liquids will leak out of the hole, but not big enough that liquids will leak in. Meaning, for liquids to leak in, the hole has to be a little bit bigger. It has to be, you put the keli on the surface of the water, and when water starts coming into the hole, that's a little bit larger. But you can have a tiny hole where it'll allow liquid to leak out, but not to come in. So then what happens is, if it has that kind of hole, tahor milatame gistra. If that had happened, so now, if that happened to a gistra, then it's not makabel terum anymore. A gistra is a broken piece of a keli. Later on, the Gemara is going to explain that, like this. Now you have like this. If you have a regular keli that develops a little hole like that, you're not necessarily going to throw it away. You're going to still keep it around, because after all, klei cheres costs money. But what you're going to do is you're going to take a gistera, you're going to take a broken piece of a different klei cheres, and you're going to put it underneath it to catch the overflow. So like this, as the liquid is leaking out, it'll get caught in the gistera, and eventually you'll pour it back into the container, or you'll drink it, or whatever it is. On the other hand, if you have the gistera itself develops even a tiny hole, nobody is going to say, well, the gistera is broken, let's put another gistera underneath it to catch the overflow. Once the gistera itself develops any even the tiniest hole, you're just going to throw it away. So if it was an intact keli that developed such a small hole, then it's still considered a keli. But if a gistera develops such a hole, then you would just throw it away. So then as a gistera, it's not makabel terum anymore. A gistera is also made out of earthenware, but it's a broken piece of earthenware that you're keeping around to use to put underneath a large keli that developed a tiny little crack. Yeah. So nikav kamotzi mashka. So again, if the thing developed a small hole, tohor milatame gistera. If that thing that developed the hole is a gistera, then it's not makabel terumah anymore. But if it's a whole keli, if it's an intact keli, then it's still makabel terumah. And ba'adayin klihu lekadosh b'meichatas, and in fact, it's still considered a keli insofar as you could use it to be lekadosh meichatas, to mix parah b'ma water. When you take the water and put the ashes and put the ashes in it, it has to be done in a keli. But not in all the mayim kaim el keli. So if it has a tiny hole like that, it can still be considered a keli. Therefore, you're allowed to use it for kiddush meichatas. Next. Nikav tikoines mashka. What happens if it has a bit of a larger hole where it's large enough for liquid to leak in? If you put it on the surface of the water, then the water will leak in through the hole. So now it's a little bit of a wider hole. Tahor mekadesh by mechatas. So now it's tahor from being mekadesh mechatas. Not tahor in the sense that Rashi says tahor means like it's been removed. Now it's bottle from being considered a keli as far as mechata. If you mixed paradrumo water in such a cracked keli, it would be possible. Because the paradrumo water has to be mixed in a keli, and this isn't a keli. So it's no longer usable for mechata, but it's still a keli for all other purposes, and it's still makabel terumah. Nika Kishodish cotton. And one other thing is also then in that case it may also be possible to use fertility dyeing as well. Okay. The third one, Nika Kishodish cotton. The third one is if it has a larger hole, large enough for a small root, which is larger than Konis Mashta, because you need to have the actual width of the root. So then, Tohar Malahach Shabozroim, at that point, as we said before, if you have plants growing in it, then they're not able to be Mokshar the Kabbal Tum. If you, at this point, pour water or any of the other Shiva Mashkim on them, they won't be able to be Mokabbal Tum because they're already considered attached to the ground because of the size of this hole. So, and we said before that anything attached to the ground is not able to be Mokshar the Kabbal Tum. Actually, Rashi says according to the Rabbanan. The truth is, it would be true according to the Shimon as well. The reason we're not mentioning that is because we're talking about five different sizes over here, and according to the Shimon, you actually have six, because according to him, you have, again, that whether the flower pot has a hole or not, then you still potter from taking out things on Shabbos. In other words, Rav Shimon is saying that the dinim of Shabbos and the dinim of Hechsher, the Kabbal Tumah, are two different things, whereas the Chachamim equate them. So if we're trying to say five things, that necessarily has to be according to the Chachamim.
Great, means to keep them the same.
So such a keli that has a hole large enough for a small root is Tohar in the sense that anything growing in it cannot be mukshar the kabel chuma, but a dying klihu the kabel by zaytin, but it's still considered a keli that can hold olives. In other words, it's still a kabel chuma for all other purposes. Because a keli is normally meant for food, and the shear would be only if it's large enough that olives will fall out. You have, by the way, there is a concept. If you have a keli that's set aside for liquids, then taka the shiurim are smaller. Then konis mashka already makes it that it's bottle from being a keli. But most klei cheres are meant for food, not for liquids. Next, nikav kamotzi zeisim. If this keli then develops a hole large enough for olives to fall out of, tohar milkabel bezeisim. At this point, it's not makabel tumah anymore as far as holding olives, so it's not makabel tumah, and it's not considered a keli anymore. But the adayim klihu lekabel b'rimonim, but it's still considered a keli as far as holding pomegranates. Meaning Rashi says two possibilities. One is, let's say after the keli broke to the extent where olives will fall out, the guy says, okay, so I won't keep olives in there anymore, but I'll still use it in order to keep pomegranates in. But then he's still making it into a keli, so it still is able to be makabel tumah. Or Rashi says a second explanation, if to begin with, all along, he'd been using it to store pomegranates, then the fact that it has a hole large enough for olives to fall out of is not mevatelit. You have actually the Rash of Ben Shimshon in his Pidush on Kalim actually disagrees with that and says that even if it was set aside to begin with for pomegranates, it would already be bottle once it's large enough for olives to fall out of. He says that you could redesignate it for pomegranates and remember Kabbal Tumah, he disagrees with that concept. He says if you hadn't previously had it for pomegranates and now it developed a hole that size, then already it's not a Kabbal Tumah, even though you could still use it again for pomegranates. Okay. Nikav kamotzi rimonim tohar miklum. Once it has a hole large enough for pomegranates to fall out, then it's completely not considered a keli anymore. Except, Rashi says, you still could set it aside at that point as a gistera, and then it would be makabel tumah as a gistera, but not it wouldn't be makabel tumah as a keli anymore. Tosfos says that actually it depends really. Are we talking about that the shape of it is such that it could be used as a gistera or not? If it's still a whole keli and it has a hole in it the size of a pomegranate, you're not going to say that it's a gistera because it's not really functional as that. If it happens to be a piece that's more or less like semi-flat or whatever and it's able to be used as a gistera, yeah, then it would be metameh. It would be mechabel tumah as that. Okay. Next. The imhuka summoned still. Now, what happens? This keli that has a hole in it. What if the opening of the keli, the regular opening that is covered with a summoned pustle, is covered with a tightly stoppered and fitted covering seal, which the Torah tells us that if you have a kli cheres like that that's covered with a summoned pustle and it's in an oil mess, then the keli itself and what's inside it will remain tar, because the truma can't get into it through the opening, because the opening is closed. So let's say you have a keli. So let's say you have a keli that where the actual opening that was made to begin with when the keli was made is covered with a tumid puzzle, and you have a hole elsewhere in the keli. So then, adji pachas yurabai, it's only mekabel tumah only if most of the keli was broken open. Meaning, Rashi says, because the tumah cannot come in through a hole. The tumah can come in only through a pesach, meaning the actual opening, the designed opening of the keli. So in this case, when you have a hole on the side, then the tumah can't come in through that hole. So therefore, it doesn't matter. As long as the top is covered with a tumid puzzle, then we don't care that there's a hole in the side. Unless most of it is broken open. Tosfos on the next Amud discusses that and says that not necessarily. That actually, when we say over here, that actually what we could be talking about over here is that the hole has to be covered with a thumbed puzzle. So in other words, according to Rashi, what it means is that if less than half of the surface of the keli is broken, then as long as you have a thumbed puzzle on the top, then it's good, even though you have a big hole on the side. Once it's rubber, then that doesn't work anymore. According to one possibility that Tosfos brings up, anyway, it would be if you have a smaller hole, then that hole has to also be sealed up with a tumid puzzle. Once you have a hole larger than half the surface of the keli, even a tumid puzzle won't help. Amravasi. So Amravasi says in this connection, Shamati klicheres shiure kimoti riman. I have heard from my rabbeim that the shiur of a kli cheres is only if it's large enough, that only if the hole is large enough that pomegranates will fall out of it. Meaning, not like we said before, that there are different shiurim, the size of olives or the size of whatever. Ravasi is saying that with the whole din, that the keli becomes bottle, is only when you have the largest possible hole in it, not like these five different sizes that Rava is mentioning. So Rava says, Shemala Shamata Ela Mukhas Tumid Pasul. Maybe what you heard is in this connection of Mukhas Tumid Pasul, that if you have a hole large enough for a pomegranate to fall out, then already a Tumid Pasul doesn't help. So the question is, what do you mean? Rava himself just said that it has to be that most of the surface of the keli is broken for a Tumid Pasul on the opening of it to not help. The answer is, like Kasha, Haba Rava Revi Haba Zutri. The Hub is a three. It depends whether you're talking about a large keli or a small keli. So a large keli, Rashi says, in order for a summit puzzle to not help, it would have to be most of the surface of the keli was broken open. You have less than 50% of the original surface of the keli is still intact. When it comes to a small one, then it would be commodity rimon. Tosfos says the other way around. So in other words, according to Rashi, it comes out, you would have to have that the whole has to be both. It has to be ruboy and kimosi rimon. So with a large container you need most of it. And by that time, of course, it's large enough for pomegranates to fall out of also. When it's a small keli, then you need kimosi rimon, which also comes out to be rove of the keli. You need both, in other words. According to Tosfos, it's kind of the other way around. Larger containers, all you need is mosi rimon. Smaller ones, where mosi rimon would be more than 50% of it, then you just need rubai. So in other words, according to Tosfos, it's the lesser of the two. Okay, but that's what it is. The Gemara is saying. So Rava would say that it depends on the size of the keli, whether we would say that you need a whole kimosi rimon, or whether you would say ruboy, and then at that point it's not considered a keli, and tumid puzzle doesn't save the keli or its contents from becoming tumid. Okay. Shpeach, everyone.